Hi, Jim Roddy here from the RSPA, jumping in before today's podcast to remind everyone that registration is now open for Retail Now 2024, the Retail Technology Channel's number one trade show, education conference, and networking event. Join RSP and Retail IT channel leaders live and in person July 28th through the 30th back on the Strip in Las Vegas at the Paris Hotel. With nearly 200 exhibitors, Retail Now is one-stop shopping for VARs and ISVs. And with an expected 1,600 or more attendees, it's the place for extreme industry connectivity. Across just 48 hours, you'll meet new partners and new solution providers who can accelerate the success of your business. And as I record this, early registrations are trending ahead of prior years, not just by 1% or 5%. We are actually 49% ahead of where we are prior years. So don't miss out on what could be the best Retail Now ever. Again, if you're serious about the Retail IT channel, you have to attend Retail Now 2024, July 28th through 30th in Las Vegas. Retail Now is where the industry meets. For all the details and to register at discounted early bird rates for VARs, visit the Retail Now website today at gorspa.org/Retail Now. I hope to see you there, and I hope you enjoy this episode of The Trusted Advisor. Welcome to another episode of the Trusted Advisor podcast and video series powered by the Retail Solutions Providers Association. Our goal on the pod is to accelerate the success of today's and tomorrow's leaders in the retail IT industry. I'm Jim Roddy, back with you again. Thank you so much for joining us. So throughout the year, we're talking with leaders about their leadership journeys and what they've learned along the way. We have two special guests today. I'll introduce them to you, but they don't need to be introduced to each other. First, Brad Lucas is the president of VAR Lucas Systems, headquartered near Greenville, South Carolina. He's been with the company nearly 19 years and has appeared on stage as a featured panelist at RSPA's Retail Now trade show and conference. Brad, welcome to the Trusted Advisor.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Yeah, always a pleasure to talk with you. Our second guest is Brad's younger brother, Owen Lucas, the Vice President of Operations for Lucas Systems. Owen's been with the company for 16 years, and in 2023, he was named one of RSPA's Next Gen 40 Under 40 Rising Stars. Owen, great to have you here. Always a pleasure to talk with you as well.
Thanks, Jim. Looking forward to it.
So for folks who don't know, Lucas Systems was founded in 1992, and today they focus on providing technology solutions to the restaurant space, specifically quick service and fast casual restaurants. Lucas has about 40 employees, and they support restaurants throughout the United States, including national brands like CKE Restaurants and Bojangles, as well as regional chains and local restaurants. And in 2023, Lucas Systems was named one of the best places to work in South Carolina. So, gentlemen, congratulations on that award. Congratulations on your success. And I have a whole bunch of leadership-related questions to ask you, but I'm hoping you can first set the context of your leadership journey. Like, we talked about, you know, when Lucas Systems was founded, but talk about the roots of the organization and how you each got involved in the business. So, Brad, if you want to go first.
All right, great. Thanks. Yeah, so I believe my recorded date of hire was somewhere around June of 1996. So I was fairly young, grew up in this family business, and it was something that was always, you know, near to us and something that we enjoyed, you know, we thought we would enjoy being a part of at an early age. So dating back, you know, some of my earliest memories of being around here. I remember one special story of hopping on an airplane with our dad, actually, and one of my summers in high school, heading up to New Jersey and renting a box truck and going to some random warehouse out in the middle of nowhere and loading up a lot of old point of sale equipment, hardware, registers that had been pulled out of a restaurant chain, and bringing those back home that would be refurbished and resold and supported by our company. That was well before I even began to realize what we were, you know, what we did for a living, what this company did. And I thought the coolest thing I thought about that trip was, number one, spending some time with my dad. But number two is that we were in seven states in one day. So it was, those are some of the roots of you know, hard work and really learning about what we might do at this company, you know, as a young man.
And how did the If I can just ask, how did the business get off the ground? Like, was it something your dad started from scratch? Was it something he acquired? Partners? How did it originally get started?
So yeah, it started in 1992 as a on-site service and repair company. So we were working on legacy point of sale systems at the time, and over the years the business, you know, the business grew from that standpoint. He had had a prior career in a similar business, and you know, knew that the customers were there and knew that there was a service need there. So that's really the roots of how it got started. So
great. What else would you share in terms of how you got involved in the business after that first trip?
So I went off to school, and I thought I was going to become a lawyer. It's really what I wanted to do. And I remember having a conversation at the time with my dad, and he's like, well, that'd be great to have a lawyer on staff one day. And so it didn't click. I was at the time, you know, settling down with my fiance, and decided that law school was not really the direction I wanted to go. And I decided that I was going to become an insurance salesman. And that I had a couple of great mentors that I talked to at the time that told me that, you know, the insurance business was always going to be here, Brad. He said, but your family business is something special, and it may not always be here if you're not there. And so I kind of took that to heart and decided that I was going to, you know, give that a try first. And that way I would know that if I didn't like it, I tried it, and I would have no regrets. But at that moment, I guess in around 2004 was when I officially started, you know, full time here, which I call it, you know, beginning probably the hardest journey I'd ever stepped foot down. So.
Excellent. Thank you for that. You and I have known each other for years, but I did not know that backstory. So that's tremendous. So Owen, talk about your path, you know, from being born into the family business, but then actually to working for the family business.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, my path was a little bit similar to Brad's when we were younger. You know, on the weekends we would come into the warehouse, clean parts, really do whatever we needed to do while my dad was working, you know, overtime. He was here all the time. So when we were with him, we were typically at the office as well. So, you know, in college, I went to study for restaurant management. And I thought I wanted to be in the restaurant industry, managing restaurants, things like that. But after working in several restaurants in college and post-college, I had a change of heart. So about a year after I graduated school, I had the opportunity to come to Lucas and really, you know, get into the production, staging, integration from kind of the beginning, and then doing morning service operator type work, and then getting into the install. So we, you know, trying to learn from the ground up, being probably the bottom of the rung, if you will, learning every step of the way. So it was, you know, it was a great learning experience those early years, and then, you know, just keep evolving. So probably done most of the roles here at one point or another. So I feel like that's a great way for myself to continue to learn the ropes. So
yeah, thank you. And we just did a podcast with Bobby Bauer from BMC, who's you know, second generation in the business. Truman Meacham from Alpha POS, also second generation in the business, and they work from the ground up and thought that was super important. So, and so I guess Owen, can you kind of add to that in terms of how important was that journey? And I guess also important that it sounds like neither one of you were coerced or compelled, like, no, it's the family business. This is where you're going. I've always felt bad for like second generation funeral directors, because I think, like, did those kids have a choice? You know, they're like, I'd like to do something. No, you have to deal with, you know, cadavers and grief and stuff like that. But it sounds like, I guess, you can talk about that journey, and then also the fact that it wasn't something that was forced upon you. You're doing this out of your own choice.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were definitely not forced to come in here. You know, our dad, he, you know, he ran a, you know, successful business, and he knew what it took. And he wanted to make sure that we were, you know, all in on trying to, you know, understand if this was going to be the path we wanted to take. So we had the opportunity, like I said, we had to, you know, come in and interview with him and, you know, talk with him and saying, this is not, you're not going to be given, you know, any special treatment. You're going to have to put in the work, do the grunt work. So it was, real eye opening at that point in my life. Abroad for a little while. And, you know, I was coming back in the real world, and it didn't help that I was living him with him at the time. So living with him and then working with him every day. So it was a lot. So,
well, thank you. So let's keep going down that path. So talk about that, the dynamic of being brothers and being coworkers. So I'm curious, like, do you blend everything? Do you keep some aspects separate? And I want to see the dynamic is. So usually I'll say, so-and-so take this question first. I'll leave it to the two of you to sort this out. Who answers that question first in terms of how you work as brothers and as coworkers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll take that one first. So Brad and I are super close. I mean, we've always been super close. You know, being a family company, we always talk shop outside of work. So that's, you know, it's part of our nature. It was ingrained to us, and, you know, over the years, we've tried to be intentional on getting outside the office so we can really work on the business. So I believe that, you know, when we commit to doing that, you know, that time outside of the office really helps us propel where we want to be. And obviously I look up to Brad a lot. He's been, you know, a mentor of mine, obviously looking up to him since I was, you know, a little kid, being my older brother. So it helps that we work well together. So, you know, that I'm blessed that we have that type of relationship. So.
Great. And Brad, can you talk about the brother dynamic?
Well, I'm flattered. Oh, and I've never heard you say that. So, so yeah, Jim, I mean, we do as brothers. I mean, we're close, relatively close in age, close in the business. We blend a ton together, which is great. We also have different areas. Initially, we had different areas of the business that we focused on, so we weren't overstepping each other. But being in a small, you know, being in a smallish business, we're always working through decisions with one another, which is really awesome. I mean, it's nice to, you know, in any successful business, you need those types of folks on your leadership team, I believe. And for it to be, you know, my biological brother is really, really special and really cool. I mean, there are obviously, you know, times where we don't agree on things and we have to work through that. But we always appreciate at the end of the day that, you know we got each other's back, just like we know that we have the backs of our other, you know, that our staff that is here. So it's really cool. From that standpoint, you know, Owen also inspires me to do better, you know, be a better leader. And it's been really neat. I mean, we've been able to see other family owned and operated businesses, either here locally that we know or ones we've met throughout the country. And we it's really special to be able to have that, because we know a lot of them. There's a lot of contention and competitive nature that builds up between siblings sometimes. And we knew that if we were going to make a go of this and it be successful, that we wouldn't be able to, you know, have that as added baggage. And so we just show up every day and do the best we can for our each other, for our team and for our customers, of course. So.
Now, and thank you for that. And part of the reason I'm also really interested in the brothers dynamic is, so I started my career in this industry at Business Solutions Magazine. It was called Corey Publishing, then Jameson Publishing. It was owned by two brothers, Rick and Terry Peterson. And so the thing that you alluded to, where it's not, hey, we're going to be overlapping on a whole bunch of things. You overlap on the things you need to, but you also have a very clear separation of duties. I'm in charge of this stuff, I'm in charge of this stuff, and then we overlap where we need to, as opposed to you have to arm wrestle on anything. Do you guys see that as very important to be able to keep the relationship going and keep it healthy, that it's not just, hey, we're brothers and everything that we share and we arm wrestle over, but that you do have those very clear duties? Because again, that's how it was at Jameson. Like, again, I haven't worked there for 10 years. Rick, everything sales related, Terry, everything operations related. And then if anything had to overlap, then it was the two of them together. Is that, you think, really like a key to making this thing work for as long as you have?
Yeah, I'll answer first. I think so. I mean, and that's kind of our separation. Mine has always been on the sales and business development side, marketing side, you know, relationships with customers, and Owen on the operations, you know, production on that side of the business. But as things have grown, Owen has come over into the sales, you know, side of the business development side of the business, building relationships with new customers, and it's really been great. So,
excellent. Owen, any last words you want to say on the brother topic?
No, I mean, I think Brad pretty sums it up. We try to, you know, we know our roles, specific roles that we have to do every day, but we have a lot of, you know, overlap where we can, you know, talk with each other, figure out what, you know, what needs to be done, who's going to handle what. So we try to handle those situations together. So.
Right. I will say that the Petersons who I work for were really good at making sure that any squabbles, people weren't in between. Though I will say very early in my career, they disagreed on something. They brought me in the room. They're making passionate arguments. And they basically were like, you have to pick, you know, who's right and who's wrong. I've ever saying to them, like, you guys are really, I got to tell you, you're putting me in a terrible spot here. And they're like, yeah, that's true. I guess we are. Like, let's talk about not who's right, but what's right. That was one of their big mantras there. But yeah, that was probably 30 years ago. And I can still remember, like, one of you guys is going to fire me because I'm going to pick one or not the other. So let's continue to talk about family businesses, because a lot of RSPM members are family businesses. And I know this is going to be like not a nice thing to say about family businesses, but it's true. Oftentimes the second or third generation, they see the business as a birthright and they just don't have the drive to improve themselves and the organization, right? They just go into almost maintenance mode, or it's almost a side thing to do. But again, I alluded to earlier, I've worked with both you guys over the course of many years, and I know you take the business super seriously. You're serious about improving yourselves. You're serious about improving your organization. I'm curious about where that comes from, because a very high percent of family-owned businesses, the second or third generation screws it up, right? And you guys are very focused on making the business better. So talk about where that comes from.
Yeah, and we're very aware of those statistics, and you read about it and it kind of makes you cringe. You're like, oh man, is that can't be us. And so I think the drive really for me personally comes from the very observation that you just mentioned, that it seems like, you know, it's a birthright, and it's, you know, you just come in there every day and on cruise control, and you know, I have a healthy level of fear and anxiety that approaches me every day about making sure that we protect against that, because it those kind of things aren't things that help you drive yourself personally or your organization or your team forward. And so there's a very big fear of being average and just meeting the status quo and just continuing what's been started, and continuing what's been started is don't get me wrong, it's challenging to do, especially in the business that we're in, being technology, because it's always changing. It's not really staying status quo. But we know that we got to work extra hard and have that drive and that get up and go, you know, each and every day. And that's really what we're protecting against, because we're now thinking about the future of this company and into the next, what happens far past us when our time is up. So, but we work hard to protect against that.
It sounds like you're referencing the Jim Collins phrase where he talks about productive paranoia, right? Like, there's paranoia, like, I'm afraid of everything. But productive paranoia is, hey, I understand that I'm in a position where this thing can go into maintenance mode or decline, but I'm going to make sure I outwork it in order to do that. Owen, what's your take on, you know, where the drive comes from being second generation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it would be really easy to screw it up. I mean, I obviously keeping it on cruise control, things like that. So we know that we have to work on it. In order for us, you know, as individuals, we want to, growing up, we wanted to win. I mean, that's what we want to do. So we know it takes time and effort and work to do that. So and we also realize that, you know, nothing is given here. So if we just sit back and let things, you know, be on cruise control, we're, you know, it's going to fail pretty easily. So we know we have to work at it, and we want to continue to be successful for our employees, for our customers because they rely heavily on us, and you know, they look to us for support, and we need to be there for them. So.
Great. Thank you for that. And now we alluded to, you know, you engage in activities to improve yourselves. Can you talk about what some of those specific activities are? Like, what do you do today to keep your leadership skills sharp? Who wants to take that one first?
Yeah, I'll take that one first. So over the last few years, we became members of a peer leadership group called C12. So we meet once a month with like-minded level business owners and, you know, C-level owners or C-level employees of those companies, where we can work on, you know, business level or MBA level curriculum, as well as have a forum to talk through issues at, from work or personal. So that has been a big thing for me, to be able to have a forum, if you will, a sounding board, where I can, you know, bring up, you know, tough issues that that come up at work or at home, and they're there to help me kind of work through it. So that's been a big area for me, for, you know, helping me improve as a leader. So
C12, is that what you said it's called?
Yep, C12. Okay. So it's and there, it's across the U.S. They got, you know, chairs that run each individual group. So it's really, really good organization, been beneficial to both of us. So another one is, you know, I try to listen to podcasts as much as I can. I have three small children, so my time, you know, outside of the office is very, very slim. But when I try to, there's one that I like. It's called the Growth Project by Amplos. They're a local sports and performance psychology group. And they work with universities and professionals around the U.S. and really focus on improving, you know, oneself and their growth. So they got, you know, they release podcasts, you know, every week or so. And it's good nuggets I get from that. So just trying to immerse myself in with like-minded individuals that can, you know, help me hone my leadership skills.
Excellent. Thank you. And you said that's a Growth Project is the podcast.
Correct.
Great. Brad, what do you do? I mean, I'm guessing you're part of that C12 organization as well. What else do you do to keep your leadership skills sharp?
Yeah, so first and foremost for me is I'm very disciplined about regular, you know, physical exercise and physical training. So that helps me, you know, every day to kind of level set my mind and my brain and get ready for the day. You know, do read a lot as well, study other, you know and talk to, study other businesses, business owners, different industries, to try to, you know, grab, you know, what's important to them, what's working in their companies, what can I use to, to really compare to ours to help me in some ways. Have a great group of guys that I've known for probably 15, 18 years from my local YMCA. We get together, you know, regularly, kind of like my, you know, roughneck accountability group, if you will. So we run and we work out and we work through life, work through, you know, these guys are also business owners and you know, family men, and you know, we all have our share of things that we, you know, lean on each other's shoulders for. So it's great for, you know, me. That's a, you know, a group that means a lot to me, in addition to the, you know, the C12 board. Oh, that's a great, the organization is great because I have a board, Owen has a board. We're able to kind of go off and do those things, you know, ourselves, and come back and link up and compare notes and figure out what we might implement here at the company to make us, you know, better, you know, sharpen us in certain areas of the business where we know we need to improve, et cetera. So,
so you don't attend those together. It's you're in one group and Brad's in one group, Owen's in another.
Correct. So it's organized in a way where there'll be CEOs and presidents in a group, and then in Owen's key player group, they have the same level of employee in the organization. So they're all dealing with, you know, a lot of the same things in the group as how it's designed, and it's been a great thing for, you know, for us. I think we've been doing that for about 5 years now. So it's been good.
Interesting. All right, I have a comment and then a question before we do a quick commercial break. So first, Owen, you talked about balancing, you know, having kids with the self-development. My daughter attended a lot of half-hour gymnastics classes when she was a little kid. Man, I'd bring a book with me and I'd sit up in the bleachers and figured out a way to read with all this crazy noise going on. But, you know, it was great because if she was doing that two nights a week, I knew an hour a week that I was going to be able to get some dedicated reading time. And then Brad, you talked about, you know, the importance of physical exercise. On my college basketball team, John Riley was one of the assistant coaches and he was always getting a workout in. And I remember like, man, you always get your workout in. And I'll never forget him on a bike in a hotel room. And he's saying, keeps me sane, Jimmy, keeps me sane. Like that's, I've always felt like you got to keep exercising or else you will go crazy with all the pressure that's on you.
I agree with Coach. Yeah.
Still does it to this day. I don't even know where what hotel it was, but yeah, keeping them sane. So, all right, before we take a commercial break, I'm curious, who are some leaders that you both look up to as mentors and who've helped you shape your leadership approach? And I'm hoping you can not just give me names, but talk about like, what did they do or what did they say that's really had a lasting impact on you?
I'll go first. Obviously, both of my parents I've looked up to for their various, you know, leadership, mentorship skills for me from a youth, you know, all the way to you know, where I am in my life today. My grandfather was a huge part of my life, and he was a small business owner. My stepdad was also a small, you know, business owner, and naturally looked up to both of those. You know, both of those guys, man, they meant a ton to me. And I would say, you know, from a mentorship leadership standpoint, those would be the ones that I would say were huge in my life. And a lot of it was maybe some of the things that they imparted on me were just, you know, hard work, honesty and integrity, that nothing was going to come easy. There was no, no silver bullet that I could look for that was going to, you know, just make success happen one day. It was going to be the long road and, you know, keep your nose down and keep plowing. So, they're all, you know, have been huge in my life. And, you know, obviously my inspiration from, you know, my family, my immediate family, my wife and my four children. I mean, I have a lot of responsibility there that inspires me to go, you know, do every day. And so those are huge in my life. So
it's interesting you brought the word plowing, because the Petersons would always say you can be a plow horse or a show horse. And a show horse is a person who dresses the part and talks and all that stuff. But the plow horse, that's the one who's actually getting the job done. And that's really sustaining. So interesting that you talk about the hard work, the integrity, and you talked about plowing the road. Like that's really what it is. So Owen, can you talk about who has been a mentor you've looked up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So the closest mentor I would probably say is my dad and stepdad. I mean, again, as Brad said, both you know, small business owners for a long time. Listening to their advice has been pivotal for me to continue to grow as a leader. So growing up, we had this saying, keep them feet moving. And we still use it regularly today. And I think it comes from the old football drill, the up downs, you know. Get up, chop those feet, keep them going. So, you know, basically, you know, don't stop. Always keep moving at whatever we're doing. Don't be stagnant or complacent. So I think those are, as Brad alluded to, you know, the hard work, you know, it's painful, but you got to go through it and, you know, it's going to be better on the other side. So, and again, as Brad mentioned, his family, mine as well. I have, you know, three boys. And I, you know, strive to be, you know, a leader to them, because, you know, I want them to grow up to have, you know, better opportunities than I had. So me, you know, investing in them and being a mentor. So I have to grow and learn from others. You know, I try to pick up on everybody that I, you know, meet with, whatever, you know, little tidbits I can glean from others that I look up to. I try to impart on those, on my kids as well. So
Yeah, thank you for that. No, if I can just ask, like, the keep your feet moving, was that something that was just said one time and it stuck in your brain? Was it said over and over and over and over? And it's like, I'm never going to forget that. I'm just curious, like, how does a lesson like that get carried forward over decades?
Yeah, it was definitely ingrained for some reason, whether I was on the football field not keeping my feet moving or others on my team not keeping their feet moving. And it just kind of stuck with us and our family because, you know, Brad played football as well. And so we were a football family growing up in high school. And it was just one of those things that we have a lot of those little sayings in our family. And that was the one that came to mind. But definitely, you know, still use it today, use it with my kids, you know, out in the yard and things like that. So it's been something definitely ingrained in me for a long time. So.
Those high school football coaches can have an impact on you too. From a leadership standpoint. So, and I just have to add one thing if we got a minute.
Sure.
Another family saying that I forgot about that Owen made me think of was that we learned at a young age, which was it's too easy. So, life and is challenging. It's hard, and you're going to be met with things you want to do every day. And so I can vividly remember, and Owen and our sister would agree with this too, that our dad would say that was one of his sayings was it's too easy. You got to look at it, look at yourself in the mirror, whatever you have to go do, and just look at it and say it's too easy. And so that's just about getting your mindset right to know that it is probably not going to be. But if you're saying that to yourself, you know, you're going to find a way to get through it and make it work. And so I got fond memories, and we have many, some we can't probably repeat, but a lot of sayings that come to mind. So,
but it's funny, I guess if we can zoom out, like there's a leadership lesson here of if you want to impact people, you have to have something that's memorable, right? It just can't be 1,000 words. No one's going to remember that. You have to be able to synthesize it down into, again, the Petersons called it sound bites. Like if you can talk to people in sound bites, they're able to understand the context of the sound bites. Like, and you say it over and over. I think Jack Welch was the one who said, you have to say it so many times, you're just choking in, like, I can't believe I'm talking about this again. But if you do that enough, that's really going to make a culture go. That's really going to build other people because it's that repetition. And again, that it's memorable as well. It's not a paragraph. It's a few words. So I don't know if one of you wants to comment on that before we get a commercial break, the importance of repeating yourself and having these memorable phrases to make sure that gets inside the fiber of your organization.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, we worked through a couple of years ago, kind of reimagining our mission, vision, and values for the business. And we tried to boil down what was true to the fabric of our very being of this company from the get-go. And, you know, we landed on, you know, some core values that were very easy to understand, very easy to repeat. And it's something that we find ourselves making sure that we're repeating that on a daily basis with our staff, with our team. We use it to help us to really guide our behaviors, make decisions. And you really have to have something like that, I believe, to be able to make it become muscle memory where everybody starts to live, not only just say, but live those values. So,
yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you. Well, we're going to take a pause here and let our listeners and viewers know a little bit about the Retail Solution Providers Association. The RSPA is North America's largest community of retail technology VARs, software developers, vendors, and distributors. To accelerate your success through an RSPA membership, email membership@gorspa.org. Also, we want to say thank you to our sponsors who support the RSPA community and make this podcast and video series possible. Our platinum sponsors, Blue Star. Our gold sponsors are CoCard, Epson, Heartland, and ScanSource. And then finally, registration is now open for Retail Now 2024, the Retail IT Channel's number one trade show, education conference, and networking event. This year's event is set for July 28th through 30th at the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas. For more information, visit gorspa.org/retail now. Retail Now is where the industry meets. And since we're talking RSPA, I have a silly question for you guys. So I have a coworker. His name is John Grega. His wife is pregnant. They know it's going to be a boy. I've been lobbying for Greg Grega being the name. I have to ask you, with the last name of Lucas, is there anybody in the family tree whose name is Lucas Lucas? I'm just curious if anybody's been brave enough to go down that path.
Not that I know of. There might be someone down the line, but Not that I know of.
No, but I had a, now that you say that, Jim, I had a high school football coach and a history teacher who was a former Airborne Army Air Force Airborne Ranger. He was my position coach on the football field, and he was just as hard a man as they made in my age. And his last name was Lucas. There was no relation. His name was J.F. Lucas. And we always used to, he was a youngest guy at the time. He told me in history class one day, he's like, he said, "Hey, Brad," he said, "when we both have our first boys, let's both name them Luke Lucas." First name Luke, last name Lucas. I thought it was the funniest thing. Of course, he didn't name his first son Luke Lucas, and I didn't name mine Luke Lucas either. But, you know, he always thought that was funny. So
good. Awesome. Well, good. I'm glad at least someone else is thinking the same as me. I would never do it. I'd never do it either. But it's something fun to think about. So, all right. Well, if we were in, I'll look up on LinkedIn afterwards, see if we can find a Luke Lucas around, see if somebody pulled it. So, all right. So a few more questions for you. I want to talk about some of the experiences that shaped each of you as a leader. Can you talk about a learning experience or like one story that's really stuck with you and shaped you as a leader over the years? So who wants to take that one first?
Yeah, I'll do that one first. So I think one of the biggest learning experiences that I found was, you know, really, you know, doing what I say I was going to do. And that, you know, that is a simple phrase, but it takes hard work to follow through on. You know, early in my career, things would, you know, drop off my list or get overlooked. And, you know, again, could be a problem, you know, for whoever, you know, I was telling that to. Not intentionally, but, you know, as things got busy or, you know, I wasn't following through on those things. So, but I've learned over the years that, you know, doing what we promise to someone is how we build trust and create meaningful relationships, which is, part of our core values. And, you know, if people don't trust us to do what we're going to do, you know, we've basically failed them. So they're not going to put trust in us. They're not going to want to, you know, come to us for advice or, you know, or business or anything like that. So that's one thing that I've, you know, it was brought to my attention early on. And, you know, I was, you know, committed to making sure that, you know, going forward is that, you know, I have, you know, whatever I say is, you know, I have to do. So
what was it, like a series of small things, like, hey, these small things falling through the crack, or was it like one big thing? They're like, oh gosh, I fell down on this.
It was probably mostly small things, you know, it just kind of built up. And then, you know, whether it was lack of knowledge of, you know, what I was actually doing at the time. But again, over the years, you know, Brad and my dad, you know, brought those to me and said, you know, we got to hone in on this. So that stuck with me. And that's what I thought of as this learning experience. And again, doing what we say we're going to do is huge for us and me personally. So.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that. Brad, what's one story, one lesson that stuck with you forever?
Yeah, I love that you said that, Owen, because I mean, in business today, I feel like if we can do what we say we're going to do, then we outpace our competition 9 times out of 10. There's so many that drop the ball. And so it seems like something simple. It's not always easy to do, but it's one of those things that really can make an impact in today, because the level of expectation for a lot of people and the level of service they get is just lower. And so we like to try to, you know, blow them away when they experience, you know, working with a company like ours. But I would say for me, one of the biggest lessons I learned was, you know, after graduating from a pretty good business school and doing well, coming into the workforce and learning how much I did not know. That was a huge lesson in humility. And at the age that I was, 21 or whatever, I was like, impossible. There's no way I really don't know anything, right? But what I did not know what the workforce and the working world and the daily, you know, grind or the plow field, whatever you want to call it, was going to teach me over time. That's just one of those things that, you know, higher education learning could not replace what working in a field was going to teach me. And that's probably one of the most important lessons that I had to learn early on, And humility is key. I mean, that's a big part of who we are. It's a big part of the, you know, the fabric of what this company is and made of, and how we like to treat our customers and our employees. And, it's one that I look back to, and I'm thankful to have learned early, because I've seen others that don't have a sense of that. And I can see how sometimes they can be quick to be on a crash course. So.
Yeah, they get defensive about, no, I do know things. I have to make excuses for it, as opposed to, well, maybe I don't, so I should roll up my sleeves and figure it out. That seems to be a big difference between somebody having a growth mindset, I can get better, as opposed to, nope, I'm good enough. I know all this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about organizational goals and company vision. So your website says, we have never had a goal of becoming one of the largest point of sale providers. Rather, we focus on being one of the best, most reputable point of sale providers. So that book reminds me, we were talking about books earlier. There's a book called Small Giants, Companies That Choose to Be Great Instead of Big. So can both of you talk about, like, why do you have that vision? Why do you overtly state it on your website, right? What are your growth goals? And then how do you communicate that with your team in terms of best versus biggest? Who wants to take that one first?
Let me take that on.
Yeah.
So I'll start with just, I'll restate what our vision is, because it's something that we worked on a couple of years back. So it's really simple. It's for us to deliver quality solutions backed by the best service while building lasting relationships. So this, it's a sentence. It's easy for people to get behind and understand. But you know, the comment about us not being the biggest but one of the best was a statement that was made a long time ago. And I think early on, I'm sure it was made by Lee, our dad, and it was really just about trying to be the best that we could be. We knew that as a small growing company, we weren't going to be able to be in every account, in every location, but the ones we were in, we were going to be great in, and we were going to be the best in. And that helps kind of reframe, you know, our daily goals and being at peace with who we are as a business and knowing that we're serving a need for a great group of clients that are out there in the marketplace. And that has enabled us, that focus has enabled us to naturally grow, as opposed to being focused on being the biggest and growing with, you know, not great service or average, average ratings on our customer health checkup surveys that we do every year. We wanted to be the best where we were. And because of that, it helped us to, like I said, organically grow. And those satisfied customers would introduce us to others. And, you know, we felt like that was a good long game approach for us to embrace that focus and be fully behind it and carry that forward into the future. So.
Owen, what would you add to that in terms of the focus on best versus not necessarily growth?
Yeah, I think, it doesn't always mean, you know, bigger is best. So we want to make sure that we, you know, do focus on building the relationships we want to have with customers as part of our vision. So I feel most people want to partner with people, you know, not companies. And it goes a long way when we build the trust of others on how we treat, you know, their business needs. And we certainly have, you know, goals for growth. I mean, but we want to do them strategically, make sure it's the right fit, something that we can, you know, be, you know, excellent at. So I think, we've tried things in the past that, you know, maybe weren't successful in our minds, but, you know, those are all those learning experiences of what we can take to the next opportunity, so we can be, you know, great the next go round, if you will.
And can one of you answer for me? So this is, I think, a struggle everybody who's running a small business and you don't have a plan on being massive. Employees are like, I want to do more. I want to get promoted. And you're like, well, if we're, you know, not going to be some massive conglomerate, you know, people can't get promoted you know, every year and have, you know, a whole bunch of team, you know, that they're going to supervise. Like, everybody can't be a supervisor. Can you talk about the balance of that in terms of keeping people challenged and keeping people, you know, fresh in their job when it's not, there's not a corporate ladder to climb? Which of you wants to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. So I think, you know, that's a big struggle for us. I mean, again, as you stated, for those reasons. I think in our business, we have, you know, being in the technology business, it always changes. So you get that, you're working on some new software project or piece of software that, you know, reinvigorates, you know, the individual and say, hey, this is new. This is not what we were doing, you know, 6 months ago. But yeah, it's a challenge where we have, you know, we want to grow individuals, people want to grow, to newer roles. And, you know, it's just, it depends on, you know, the business growth for us. I mean, a lot, for, you know, somebody to get promoted to a new role. I mean, the business, the needs need to be there. But I think, you know, the technology, us doing new types of software that we're, you know, been a part of over the last couple of years is kind of refocus some of our team to say, hey, this is new cutting edge software versus kind of what we've always been doing. So I think it helps them know that even though it's kind of in the same vein of what we've always done, it's a different, you know, it's a different flavor of it. So,
Is it making sure their day, their week, their month, their year is challenging as opposed to that their title has to change every 3 years or something, or supervising more people? Is that kind of what you guys are saying?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, daily, weekly, monthly, us trying to get new things and put in front of the people that, you know, show that those interests or express the, you know, the growth, I think is important versus a title, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, what I've observed is that just the change that the business presents, Jim, allows a massive amount of opportunities, you know, for folks. The fact that we're doing more things than we were 5 years ago presents opportunity in itself. So it does. I mean, there's opportunity presented inside the business with our natural organic growth every day, and then what we talk to our team a lot about is that it's stepping up, taking advantage of those opportunities, raising your hand and be involved, not ducking the new opportunities that are coming out, but because they're new and they're challenging, that they're not going to be easy to embrace those and say we're on this path to learn and grow and do more solutions for our customers together. So who wants to be a part of that? So those things, you know, turn into projects, and a lot of times they turn into new you know, business divisions for us that we're focusing on growing. And so, and we need somebody to be a big part of that. And so it does naturally create those opportunities when sometimes we take a look back and we're like, man, how are we ever going to be able to provide what we want to be able to provide for our team to get that growth. But there's a ton of, you know, continuing ed opportunities that are out there, trainings that, you know, we always are open to putting our staff through that are interested and things of that nature. So, but it is, I mean, it's a challenge that every business owner has, because, you know, we've been fortunate to be able to have very tenured staff that have been with us for a long, long time. And that's great. It's a challenge that we face every day. I know, and many do. So.
Right. No, well, thanks for sharing those specifics. So I know we're right up against our time, but I do have one last question. We were talking about people. I want to close on how you take care of your people. I've seen you publicly honor them for their years of service. You just alluded to that. You have some folks who've been there for 30 years, right? Almost from the beginning. You host an employee appreciation party. You publish employee spotlights. And as we talked about at the outset, you've been named one of the best places to work in South Carolina. Can you talk about your approach to not just taking care of your customers and not just running the business, but taking care of your people? Who wants to take that one first?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So we have a great team here, and that's largely why we've been successful for so long. You know, we try to celebrate milestones, anniversary, birthdays, as well as company outings to help build relationships within our team. You know, we want to continue to improve how we are caring for our team, because, you know, this day and age, you know, it's just not about a paycheck. You know, people want to feel valued and have a sense of purpose, which is great. That's what we want. I mean, we don't want somebody just coming in here for a paycheck. And I think people want to feel they're contributing to a greater purpose. And that is super important that our team feels this way so we can really care about our customers and their businesses. And, you know, we do those things, but I know we could do a lot better. We can do more of it. It takes a lot of time and effort, but those are things that, you know, our staff, you know, people want these days, to have, you know, to have that, camaraderie and time away from the office with the team. And feel like they're a part of something greater. So,
so thanks for that. It also, like, it's kind of how you guys are wired. This is all great, but we can do better. That seems to be like your approach to a lot of things. Well, that's all great, but we're not going to hurt our arms, patting ourselves on the back, because we're figuring out how to get better. So, I guess Brad, if you want to comment on that, and then also, you know, wrap us up in terms of how you take care of people.
I mean, we try to treat everybody in this organization the same way we treat ourselves, you know, opportunity to strive to get better every day. And Jim, we just try to stay, you know, true to who we are. We know the people inside this business make it all work every day. It was a long, long time ago that it stopped being about, you know, one or two people. And so we're Owen and I is just who we are. We're very passionate about people, and we know that the improvement of people and folks in our culture inside the organization, you know, help breeds success and growth and passion and all of those things. And we're serious about, you know, taking the temperature of those things regularly. And so at least annually we update our playbook, Lencioni's playbook format. And so we work on our mission, vision, values, and answering those top six questions. And we communicate that out to the staff. And that's how we communicate, you know, kind of our roadmap and where we're headed. And then we're very serious about the feedback we get. So the best places to work gives us incredible anonymous feedback from our team, shares with us how we're doing, what we might need to work on, what we might, you know, what blind spots we might have. And then obviously, the customer health checkup surveys that I mentioned, that's also feedback that we get from our customer base. And we're serious about that. We pay attention to it. We want to see that improve every year. You know, being above the industry average is not good enough. We want to keep driving that forward. And so we take that feedback, and I'm looking at it in real time as we're getting feedback and trying to improve. So it's everywhere. You know, there's always a little bit of area where you can grow and improve. So that's what we're all about. So,
right. Well, we'll end on that. I'll share with you guys, as we're recording this, the RSP is in the middle of our annual member survey. And I'm thinking about you guys, because we've worked on that, you know, customer health checkup together for years. And I'll say to our audience, Brad and Owen, like, they are so close to the situations. And if there's something that's a surprise to them, they've either already dug into it or they dig into it right away. And so as we're getting that real-time feedback right now, we're jumping on. Like, we had one, you know, member who expressed some dissatisfaction with something. We've already reached out to them. And I'm thinking about you guys as I do that. In terms of, right, I got to follow in the footsteps that you guys have set before. So,
awesome. Gotta dig in, Jim. That's right.
I got to keep my feet moving. That's what I got to do. Right. Got to keep my feet moving and keep plowing. So, all right. Well, that does it for this episode of The Trusted Advisor. If you enjoyed our discussion, be sure to subscribe to the RSP YouTube channel and the Trusted Advisor podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to learn more best practices of VARs and ISVs in the retail technology industry, check out the RSP blog at gorsp.org and then clicking on RSP blog. Before we go, big thanks again to Brad and Owen Lucas for sharing their wisdom with us today. Thanks also to RSP Marketing Director Chris Arnold for his production work, Joseph McDade for our music, and last but not least, thanks so much to you for listening. Our goal at the RSP is to accelerate the success of our members in the retail technology ecosystem by providing knowledge and connections. For more information, visit our website at gorspa.org. Thanks for listening, and goodbye, everybody.